Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. Again, I always pretty much say the same thing when we come on air. If you got our promotion, you know that the show today is a continuation of last week's show, part two, where we ask the question, do you see, it was in the form of a singular person, do you see what I see? Do you hear what I hear? Those were questions. And then in the promo, we laid out some concepts, some almost events, things that have happened over a considerable period of time that represented something very important as relates to the current state of public education in America and also globally. And it was like a challenge that we were putting out saying, think of these words, phrases, names, events, etc., as dots, and try connecting these dots your own way and see what emerged from you connecting these dots, what picture emerged from you connecting the dots. What message, do you hear what I hear? What message comes from the dots once you connect them? And of course, the dots can be arranged and rearranged and I won't say an infinite number of patterns because I didn't give you that many dots. But as we add more dots, the way in which you could individually arrange and rearrange grows. And that's all of this was deliberate, and that remember, I keep saying remember because there are some people who actually have been with the War Report for the 3.5 years that we've been on, and some of the things that I say, I've said it before, maybe more than once, twice or three times. And then there are people who probably new to War Report last year, last few months, weeks even, that when I say remember, they go, I don't remember because I wasn't here. All right, I got that. But that's why I sort of say things the way I do. Because I'm about to repeat something that maybe I said a year ago, a year or two ago. Maybe you remember, maybe you don't. But in any event, there is a reason, a logic behind what I'm doing, the show, in terms of listing out some dots and what have you. And when I said, remember in the past, when I started the show, I talked about some things, but it was in the end of the first year, going to the second year, I laid out that the structure, the paradigm that we use here, when I say awareness leads to hopefully critical awareness, then understanding leading to critical understanding, emotional engagement leading to critical emotional engagement, and then individual and or collective positive social action, I reveal that that was a modification of the scientific method, and that I did not start the show by saying, folks, I'm going to be talking to you each week from the scientific method. Probably no one would have stayed around. But giving it the way that I did, it actually worked in terms of people who stayed with the show, who came week after week, what have you. When I was on the road trip and going to some of the conferences that I was able to go to, so many people came up to me and they thanked me for, one, having the War Report on the air, providing the big picture, and one of the most frequent compliments I got was, you lay out the micro and the macro, they didn't put it in these terms, but the micro and the macro picture, you lay out the dots and you connect them for us so that we can understand what we are going through. While we were going through it, we only saw from the trenches what was happening to us, our school, maybe our district, but we didn't see the bigger picture and how all of this has been orchestrated for a particular purpose. So that was my intent. My intent on for the two shows, one last week and this week and maybe even one next week, when I ask this, do you see what I see? I'm basically challenging you, as I said a moment ago, to look at the dots and start playing with them. Every single dot that we put up, we've done a show on that dot, or a dot has been mentioned in one or more, 300 shows or what have you, so that can you, on your own, especially when you first get the promotion, you see what the show's going to be about, look at it and start connecting dots. And I told you, Deborah Emerson did a beautiful job when she got the promotion. She, you know, she's one of us. She's a knight. And she wrote a beautiful paragraph about how she connected the dots. This was before the show, 2 days before we actually did the show. And so I'm not trying to be sneaky, but basically that's what I'm doing. I'm challenging you to see on your own the dots and connect them on your own before I do. Now, I cheat when I tell you, usually at the end of the paragraph where we talk about the dots, what I see. This week, we said basically the answer to those questions is, do you see the path to the destruction / privatization of public education and the destruction / privatization of the personal, professional teaching profession? Personal meaning having a teacher, a human being, teaching your children, not just a computer or technology of any sort. And that's where, you know, those dots could possibly lead you to. I gave you the hint. But if you went and to last week's show and you looked at the dots that we laid out last week, and you added them to this week's set of dots, you got more ammunition to work with. That was no accident. I gave you last week, what I wanted you to have to initially get you started. I added some dots this week, and I'll add some more. And these will just be maybe a little bit more than the tip of the iceberg, but it will be the more important ones. And to refresh you from last week, some of the dots were the corporate state. We've talked about what I mean when I say the corporate state. We talked about the new Reich. Reich in Germany is empire. We talked about the purpose of education. Not extensively, but it was an important dot to have on the map. Then, now, and the future. We talked about curriculum, teachers, students, social control. Talked about socialization, privatization, personalized learning, Hitler's youth power groups, the notion of guardian, activists, advocates, corporate educational reform war. This week, we added philanthrocapitalism, ALEX, reminding you of ESEA and the new version, ESSA, the Walton, Gates, Bush, 1 and 2. Well, maybe I didn't put that on your list, but I'm putting it out now. Bush, 1 and 2. Clinton, Obama. What am I saying here? These are dots, but they are some of the most important dots there could be in this war. And, as I said, I'm leading, depending on how you construct the dots, leading you to the path of the destruction of public education via privatization. Now, also, the dots, before I go into the dots themselves, here's something that I'm sure everyone, once I lay it out, would go, oh, absolutely. In this war, one of the first areas that this austerity program, we have to cut back because we don't have the money because of the financial crash and on and on and on, you know, was the arts, humanities, and did you know, also, social studies program. And key among the social studies program was what we used to call civics, which is the study of government, politics, and democracy. They were cut. They were eliminated. Seriously reduced. And as I've said before, many times, the cutting, the elimination, not accidental. It is the arts, the humanities, and the social studies curriculum that attracts and get many students engaged in. But more importantly, it is through the arts, the humanities, and the social studies curriculum that students can become aware and understand, get emotionally engaged in what is happening to them and the world in which they live in. Can come to an awareness and understanding of the political power struggles, why we are in all the wars that we're in. I'm talking about contemporary times, but they can also learn about the past, the real past, how we got to where we are today, how the various social forces, social institutions, the political institution, the economic institution, the school as an institution, the family as an institution, religion as an institution, the overall culture helps shape who they are, who they have been, and possibly who they will be. But also the arts, the humanities, and the social studies can be, for many students, the vehicle that brings a light bulb moment, the vehicle that brings the awareness, the vehicle that sparks the student's engagement, and could be the vehicle that allow or help encourage students to become emotionally engaged as well as becoming an advocate or an activist for and being able to have a voice. Critical, in my view, extremely critical. And, you know, I'm in the social sciences, so equivalent to the social studies. I can't stress enough the importance of the concepts that I just laid out, the disciplines that I just laid out, and why they were among the first targets to be eliminated and being casualties of the austerity part of the war. Teachers who taught those subjects lost their jobs in the hundreds, maybe in the thousands. This was not casual. This was something that was planned. Because if these teachers, this part of a curriculum that I just said, can make students the next generation of leaders, the next generation of citizens, aware, can make them become activists and advocates, and can provide them with the motivation, the why. Remember, the why to me is always the most important. Why they need to unite. Something that we have not been able to do, we being the adults, develop solidarity and to pose a real challenge to the status quo, to the 1% and their control of damn near everything. So in laying out this week's set of dots, I've talked about philanthrocapitalism, how capitalism or philanthropy started in the middle, late 1800s. Rockefeller, Carnegie come to mind. I'm always missing out on someone here. Oh, Ford, Henry Ford, and a few others. Their philanthropy was in the area of education. One built libraries, over 1,000 libraries, built schools, and provided money for operating the schools. Yes, they had an agenda, but basically, the money came almost no strings attached. I say almost. There's always going to be some strings attached here. Today, and for the last, I don't know, 20 years or more, maybe 30 or even more, that philanthropy has morphed into philanthrocapitalism, meaning that the people who are the billionaires and the millionaires, multimillionaires, who give to education, they have strings attached. They have an agenda. And they're using the philanthropy, which is a big tax write-off, That's the capitalist part of it, one part of it. They're using that to help shape, help control the nature of public education, the curriculum, who teaches, who are the principals. In other words, they are becoming what we talked about, I think it was year two, the architects of public education. And they're succeeding like hell in defining what a good teacher is, defining what a bad school is, defining what the curriculum should be, a STEM curriculum, you know, science, technology, electronics, that whole thing, and on and on and on. So when that word philanthrocapitalism popped up on the list, it too was pointing you to something that's very crucial to the path. In fact, I'll go as far as saying that the philanthropic, in fact, let me go back, step back. When I talk about the corporate state, and I explained that 100 times, it used to be the state and then corporate. States, through their charters, through their laws, give definition and birth to corporations. You incorporate in a given state, New York here, California, wherever, in a given state. And each state has their own set of rules. Then, if you want to be a nonprofit, you then go to the federal government and you get a tax ID number for a nonprofit so that you can get money and not have to pay taxes. Or you can give to your nonprofit and deduct from your taxable income the money that you've given to, quote, charity. So, in the past, people gave money. It was a charitable act, supposedly. There's some tax advantages, of course. But now, people set up these nonprofits, or they contribute millions, billions to nonprofits for the purpose of supporting, extending an agenda. Here we call it the Machiavellian agenda. So that's the dot, and you can connect that to the end game. And today's end game is, again, the path to the destruction / privatization of public education and the destruction of what's going on in terms of collateral damage, teachers, teachers union, communities, and et cetera. So that, let's stop. Alex, the legislative exchange. American, what is it? All of a sudden I can't remember the name, but you know it as Alex. And they just met last week. And what Alex is an organization supposedly created and maintained by the Koch brothers that bring in state legislatures. That's their primary target. They want all 50 states represented. If you have two houses of state legislature, assembly, Senate, they want those people there. There, they craft model legislation to be taken back to your states and to the feds, the Senate, the House, that pushes the libertarian agenda, that extreme brand of capitalism. You know about Alex, you know about the Koch brothers, right? They're on the list. And but if you can't connect them to the end game, if you can't connect them to the Machiavellian agenda, then you're really missing out, or I haven't done a good enough job over the last 3.5 years, if you've been around, to make you aware and understand, even at a minimal level, let alone reaching critical awareness and critical understanding. Then the ESEA, the new version, the ESSA, Every Student Achieve, whatever. I don't care who you post with or read their posts on social media, ESEA, the ESSA was all over everywhere this time last year and the months preceding coming up to this time last year, because the federal legislation that pretty much define what states have to do in order to get the millions, the tens of millions, $100 million that the government, federal government, send to states, Title I money, lunch money, lunch and special ed, all of these things, these programs are mandated. There's a standard, and if you're going to get the money, then you have to jump through these hoops. This is critical because the beginning of public education in Massachusetts and spreading across the country, it was always a state responsibility. And before that, in towns and villages and cities, it was a very local responsibility. Then states got involved, providing money and regulations. Then the feds got involved, same thing, money, regulations. But then the feds got super involved, the 60s, the mid-60s, 1960s, with this ESEA. We talked about this, was it last month or a month before, when we had a guest on the show who is marvelous in this area, Dr. Victoria Young, and we have talked about it over the years as well, that when Johnson was able to push through and sign the legislation that was then called the ESEA, Elementary Secondary Education Act, that was the feds getting more involved in public education, usurping, in some people's opinion, the role of the state, and they were, of course, able to do it because of the money. If you want our money, the old golden rule, he who has a goal makes the rule, then you have to develop what is called enabling legislation to be able to implement what our rules for you to get the money specify. And with you getting the money comes our ability to define and control. That's our DOT. The Waltons. Everyone in education know about the Waltons. In the past, when we did show on philanthropic capitalism. New Walton's was we thoroughly discussed in terms of the history and what have you. You know, I think they are still the richest family in America. That's all the siblings. We put their inheritance and then the money that they've made through the various businesses, they are the richest single family in the nation. They also happen to embrace the privatization of public education. They put out several billion dollars a year supporting projects, organizations, individuals who are pushing the privatization agenda, be it charter schools, be it vouchers, tax credit, whatever vehicle that leads to privatization, that's where their money goes big time. You know about Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates. I really don't have to say too much about that. That's a dot that, again, along with the Waltons, you should be able to immediately understand it and arrange it in whatever alignment you have to give you a big picture, small picture of what is going on in this war. Why it's a war and what's going on. The Clintons. Before the Clintons, there was the first Bush. He wanted to be the education president. And he set out, that was his promise, his campaign promise, that he was going to be known for education. Johnson wasn't known for education, but and Kennedy, because Kennedy didn't live long enough, but Kennedy Johnson really was the, I would say, and again, I'm not a historian, I'm not an ed historian, but I would think they could be called the education president or the first real education president because of the war on poverty, the ESEA, and making education part of HUD, housing, urban education. Then, and the programs that they push forward. Bush, one, had a different agenda. It was what we would call today a reform agenda. They didn't call it that. It was a corporate reform agenda. They didn't call it that. But that was what he had in mind. Bush, two, you know about. But let's not jump there yet. Let's go to Clinton. Bill Clinton, Democrat. He was a gold 2000 and other programs that he had where he was pushing the forerunner of technology. He was pushing education policies that were straight out of the neoliberal camp. And remember, the neoliberal camp in America got its visibility and its prominence 1980. But I'm going to, in a minute or two, go back and talk about history and neoliberalism again and try and tie some of these dots together. But that was Clinton's contribution. Then Bush, too. You know about Bush, too. I've said it, that the signing of No Child Left Behind, in my view, was the formal declaration of the war on public education. Up until that point, we had a war. It was more a stealth war than an open hostility in your face. We're going to kick your ass. War. They didn't say that, of course, but all you have to do is look at No Child Left Behind. And when I did a series on No Child Left Behind, and I kept saying, within that bill, there were four paths that all led to the privatization of public education and the destruction of the teaching profession, the union, and communities. You know those, especially if you're a teacher. You know it was one of the paths was taking over, quote, failing schools, turning around failing schools, giving schools over to education management companies, not teachers, companies. And then with Obama, he added expanding provision for charter schools and helping define charter schools as public schools entitled to public funding. If you're following me, people, the question, do you see what I see? And the answer, as I said, was the path to the destruction of public education. We're not there yet in terms of the total destruction of public education. I think we're well on our way. And I've said this for 3.5 years. We're much closer today than even 3.5 years ago. Far closer today than 2002, signing of No Child Left Behind. Even closer today than the race to the top. So, this is a path. These are steps. These are things that, actions that, and the people that use the dots that they created as stepping stones, creating a path for others to follow, to join in on this crusade to destroy public education. And remember, the destruction of public education is just one theater of this war. We go back, the libertarians that I mentioned earlier, the ultra-right, the conservatives, they all have different and sometimes shared ideologies that calls for the elimination of big government, and particularly the elimination of social programs, what Reagan and other Republican presidents talk about, the safety net, elimination, part of elimination or reducing the size of government is to take government out of these areas, Medicare, Social Security, now net neutrality, public housing, you name it, anywhere where public dollars were being spent to support social programs, they wanted to eliminate said program. Now, I mentioned history. I'm always saying to everyone, here on the War Report. Edmund Burke. Remember him? I've used his name maybe 1,000 times. The quote that he who does no history is doomed to repeat it. Truer words has never been spoken as relates to the war on public education. The people that I mentioned today and the organizations, the ideologies that I mentioned last week, when you throw them all in the pot, what you see is history repeating itself. There has been, some call them reforms, what was it, 5 or 6 reforms, Ed reforms, and I talked about the difference between those were, quote, I'll call, for the lack of a better word, the real reforms, in that they were trying to change education from the inside to, quote, make it better, according to what better was defined as doing that year. Whereas today's reform, they use that because that's more palatable than war, and they call it disruption as opposed to destruction, political playing with words. But the intent is the same. It goes back to the 1800s when Horace Mann in Massachusetts was trying to get this thing called public education off the ground and running. Back then, business leaders wanted a seat at the table. Business leaders wanted to have an important role in being the architect of this thing called public education back then. And they have never ceased their desire and their efforts to have a seat at the table. Sound like Randy Weingarten, doesn't it? Oh, did I say that? Sorry. No, I'm not. We've had this for 150 years, maybe, something like this. Business. Sitting at the table, flexing their muscle to try to be the architects of public education. We saw it in the Reconstruction period after the Civil War that I mentioned even at the top of this show, but we did a show on philanthropy back then. There was business. Henry Ford, business. Rockefeller, business. Carnegie, business. People using their influence and money to be architects of public education. We have seen it in other periods where business, their own interests, sitting at the table trying to shape education. We know it today as career readiness. Coming out of high school and being career ready. Whatever the hell that means, we want you to be career ready. You get the Silicon Valley in California pushing technology. We want kids coming out as coders. Everybody should be able to code. What they're not saying is, what Elon Musk and now, what's his name, Zuckerberger and others are saying, 10 years maybe, 15, undoubtedly, AI, artificial intelligence, will be more perfected than it is today, to the point where a lot of what humans do, AI programming, will be able to do through computers, robotics, you name it. That's business, sitting at the table. Back to Henry Ford and back to the beginning of the Industrial Revolution period, when machinery was being developed that displaced humans. Think of slavery and Eli Whitney and the cotton gin. Reduce the need for volume of slaves. Think of World War II, when all the factories were converted to the war industry. They went out and they got everyone, women, for the first time, maybe coming into the factories, and minorities that were not allowed to join the union or what have you. This was business saying, this is what we need. This is what education, this is what the curriculum, this is what the teacher should be trained to do, and this is what the teacher should do. Help prepare the workforce that we need. Arts, music, the humanities, social studies, they don't fit in that picture. Who need artists? Who need musicians? Who need writers? Writing novels, screenplays. Who need civics teachers? Helping grow future democratic citizens. Future citizens who will be able to be part of a multicultural or pluralistic society. A society where social justice prevails. School system that teaches social justice across the culture, across the social institutions. These names and the Alex, the ESEA, ESSA, philanthropic or philanthro capitalism, Walton Gates, Bush 1, 2, Clinton, Obama. They all have played, and some of them continue to play a role in constructing the path or multiple paths to the end game, the Machiavellian agenda, which seeks the destruction of public education and the erection of a national, globalized, privatized education that is technology-driven, without teachers, human teachers, students sitting in front of computers for X hours a day, being able to go home, you know, education anywhere, anytime, fire up the old computer and do your education. Don't you have to go to a class or see a teacher, get your diploma, an education, I mean a computer issue diploma. It's funny to me. Tragic funny, but funny. This is what we're talking about here. And let me put it in a more or the most direct way that I can, because we're coming to the end of the show. Today's show, do you see what I see? Do you hear what I hear? The answer was the path to destruction / privatization of public education, the personal, professional teaching profession being destroyed along with it. And the way in which it's happening, the dot, the elimination of arts, humanity, civics, history courses, are part and parcel of the dot. And the importance here is it is the arts, the humanity, the social studies that make it possible to have critical teaching, critical learning, critical thinking, critical pedagogy, critical research. It is these subjects, these disciplines that enrich the educational experience for all students from pre-K to PhD. But these, I want to say this, and it just popped in my head, so I hope I get it right. The thinking person curriculum is not the robotic curriculum like math, science, medicine. And I said this back in the 70s when I was at UCLA, pissing students off, that becoming an MD was nothing but, and I was joking, but I also meant it, a glorified mechanic, a body mechanic, working on something that hasn't changed for eons. Several, I don't know, 100,000 years or whatever it is. The heart is in the same place it was back then. The lungs, the kidneys, the same function, blah, 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 blah. You learned it back then. You knew it today. No big thing. It's a glorified mechanic. It was something to get people thinking and pissed off. I succeeded. But the arts, the humanities, the social studies, these are your thinking person. If we can teach critical pedagogy, get our kids to think, get our kids to connect the dots like I asked you to do. And this was part of what the structure of this show was all about. We get you to the critical thinking, being able to see things, hear things, put things together, and come up with a big picture or even a small picture. Because, folks, until we can do this, we can't see the real problem and the structure of the real problem, and we can't come up with an effective resistance to it, which means we can't save ourselves, we can't save public education. We're going to be steamrolled. And we cannot grow the next generation of true social justice, democratic, pluralistic, multicultural citizens who can continue to try and maintain what's left of an expanding democracy that we are vastly, vastly, and vastly losing. Okay, my time is up. That's what I wanted to do today. There will be a part three of this. I will lay out some more dots. But what I'm also going to do is I'm going to list all the dots from 1, 2, and the new dots, 3, so that you have them all there when if you go through our promotion and see what we're talking about. And in the future, if I come back to this after next week, I will continue to lay out the dots visually so that you can see them, and hopefully they will spark some feeling, some knowledge, so that you don't forget. With that, my time is up. Thanks, everyone. Have a good rest of this Sunday, and War Report will be back next week, same time, from the same place. There used to be a TV show that ended like that. See you next week. Same time, same place, same station. But something like that. Have a good one, folks. Bye.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.